leave us. We will be safe here.
Aye, Gareth agreed. Return home, as she said. Ironwood is where you belong.
Well, if that's what you want.
Gwen turned and started to walk away, but then twisted around sharply and flung herself at the woman with inhuman speed, her hero mark flaring on her cheek. Roan and Gareth both dove to stop her at the same time, but were too slow. The woman, the nymph, Gwen had called her, whatever that meant, was faster, however, shooting vines upward. They wrapped around a branch and she swung out of harm's way. Gwen flew beneath her, landing horizontally, her feet planted on the trunk of a tree. She rebounded off, sprinted over to Roan and Gareth, and grabbed each of them by the collar and dragged them from the clearing. They fought her every step, scratching and clawing and digging their boots into the dirt.
"Stop it, you idiots!"
she shouted, her cheeks blooming with lines of blood from their nails, as if she'd been clawed by an orcat. As she manhandled them away, however, trees blocked their path, their trunks bristling with poisonous spikes. And then she was there, the nymph, her dress swirling around her like a tornado of many colours, the resulting wind so powerful it halted them in their tracks. While they struggled against Gwen, she held them behind her back with strong, ironclad arms.
"I recognize you," Gwen said. "Really, young Orion? What would the daughter of the late, great Boronis Storm know of me?"
"You are Felicity, eldest daughter of Dressara, Queen of the Wood Nymphs."
"Yes, clever girl. But my mother is gone now, just like your father. Did you know your father loved me once?" "Liar. It's true. He couldn't take his eyes off me."
"Because you beguiled him. And what do you think love is? He would have been mine if not for your horrid mother.
Talk about a seductress. You know nothing of my mother. And neither do you, it seems. She deserved what she got, just like my dear mother. She was so arrogant she thought she would live forever, but I had different plans."
"You killed her," Gwen said.
Roan could hear the words, but they were meaningless as he struggled against Gwen's iron grip.
"Let me go!"
"Me too!"
Gareth shouted.
"My mother had her time. Now it is my time. I am the queen."
"You had four sisters," Gwen said. "Did you kill them too?"
The nymph's laugh was as spectacular as a rainbow.
"I would have, but I didn't have to. They gave me their lockets freely, once they saw what I'd done to dear mother. Now they are just another part of the wood, sleeping beauties. My rule over the tangle is total. Why do you think you're unable to find your way through?"
Gwen reversed, pushing Roan and Gareth deeper into the wood, until the spiked trees were almost touching their backs. Gareth hissed. Roan growled.
"Give them to me," the nymph said. "My soul is hungry, and they are mine. You can still walk away, Orion. What do you care for two humans? They are nothing to our kinds. Their lives will fade away long before we are gone."
"I am nothing like you," Gwen said.
She shoved Roan and Gareth back and once more launched herself at the nymph. This time the woman was prepared for both the speed and ferocity of the attack. A wall of vines rose up, swarming around Gwen and pinning her. Thorns burst from the tentacles, and Gwen screamed as they bit into her skin. Something twisted in Roan's gut, hearing his friend's cry, but then the woman spoke again, and it was all he could focus on.
"Come hither, my brave kings," she said, "and we shall be as one."
As one.
The very thought of being a part of the woman sent Roan into a frenzy. Apparently it had a similar effect on Gareth, because they stumbled and fought each other like two young boys showing off for a beautiful lady. In the end, they arrived in front of her at the exact same moment. She smiled at them, and Roan found himself smiling back so broadly it hurt. He'd found his purpose in life, pleasing this woman. Gwendolyn screamed again, and Roan felt that twisting in his gut. But he didn't look back, caught in the nymph's eyes, which were bright green and glowing, piercing him like twin daggers. She reached down and opened one of her lockets. Inside was a small mirror.
"Look," she said.
"No," Gwen yelled. "Close your—" Her warning disintegrated into a piercing shriek of pain. Roan and Gareth's heads smashed together as they fought to be the first to look in the mirror, but neither registered the pain, because images were taking shape, twisting and turning and pushing their way into their minds. Images of human men and women smiling, jumping, performing heroic feats in honour of this woman of the forest. They were happy. So happy. Roan wanted to be like them. He wanted to be one of the many. Then Roan saw only himself, reaching forward with a hand. From somewhere that seemed impossibly far away, Gwen was screaming for him to "Fight it! Fight it! Fight it!" But all he wanted was to take his own hand, to let his reflection pull him into that place where he would be loved by the most spectacular woman he had ever laid eyes on. He would be her brave king. Yes, yes, he would. He touched the face of the mirror, and then he was gone, along with Gareth, who'd done the same. One by one, the men and women in the mirror fell, writhing in pain, thorny vines twisting around them. Screams filled the air. The ground opened up and swallowed them, their cries vanishing as dirt filled their mouths. Only Roan and Gareth were left, blinking, staring at each other across a wasteland. A voice echoed from the sky, and it was no longer pleasing to Roan's ears. No, it was like a hammer, pounding him from above, driving him like a nail into the ground, making him feel smaller. Smaller than he'd ever felt. A mere shade of the man he once was.
"My brave kings, now you are mine,"
Gareth said.
"What have we done?"
Roan shook his head. He remembered the way he'd felt as he looked in the mirror, how good it felt, how perfect. "She enchanted us. We didn't have a choice." Ahead of Roan, there was an enormous glassy surface, shimmering in the wan light. "The inside of the mirror," he realized. "We're inside her locket." The realization sent chills down his spine.
"Oh, gods, we're trapped. We could have been stronger. We could have fought her, like Gwen told us to."
Roan knew he was right. They were weak. Just when he thought he was finally moving forward, controlling the direction of his own life, he'd tumbled headlong into a spider's web.
"I shouldn't even be here," Gareth muttered.
He took a step forward across the rocky terrain. Cracks formed where he stepped. Mist swirled around his ankles.
"No, you shouldn't. You should be king."
"That's not what I meant." Gareth took another step. More cracks. More swirling mist.
"I shouldn't be alive. I was meant to die. This is your fault."
Roan shook his head.
"That better be the enchantment talking. I saved your life. If you had died, you still would have been a failed shield. Guy was already dead."
Roan was aware of the nastiness in his voice, but he didn't care. This ungrateful prince had crossed the line too many times.
"You coward!" Gareth shouted, launching himself at Roan.
Roan twisted away and they went down in a heap. Gareth punched him twice in the ribs, and Roan kneed him hard in the gut. Gareth gasped, and Roan rolled away, getting to his feet.
"Stop! This is ridiculous! We have to figure out how to get out of this."
Breathing heavily and clutching his stomach, Gareth said,
"You're right."
Roan extended a hand to help him up, and Gareth accepted it. Just as Roan started to pull him to his feet, Gareth yanked back, throwing him off balance. He swept Roan's legs out from under him and pounced on top, landing blows to his jaw, his lips, his nose. Roan snuck an arm between the barrage, shoving his fingers into Gareth's eyes. The prince howled and fell back. Roan used his advantage to press his knees into the prince's chest, wrapping his hands around his neck. Anger coursed through him, flowing from head to neck to chest and into his arms and hands, which tightened. Gareth tried to suck in a breath, but couldn't. His arms and legs flopped to either side, trying to gain purchase on Roan's skin, but finding none. His face was red, his eyes wide and fearful. But then he stopped fighting, and a resigned expression formed. This was what he wanted. This was what he thought he deserved. Roan hated himself in that moment. He hated the anger inside him, hated the violence he was capable of, just like any other bloodthirsty man in the realm. He should have turned the other cheek when Gareth hit him, should have let him do as he would, until all of his fury was extinguished. Roan released him, and Gareth gasped, coughing, his hands automatically coming up to rub his sore neck, where fierce red handprints were already forming.
"No," he rasped. "Don't stop. Please. Finish me. End me."
"No," Roan said, scooting closer. Slowly, tenderly, he cradled Gareth Ironclad's head in the crook of his arm. The urge to hurt him had been replaced by a much more tender feeling. "I saved you because you are worthy of life. More worthy than I. I saved you because you are my friend."
"Let go of me," Gareth said. "We can't. This is unnatural."
Oh. Oh. Was this why Gareth had rejected him before? Because in his world men were with women and women with men? But there was no power behind Gareth's words, all strength leaving him as he nestled further into Roan's arms. He shook his head and bit his lip and wept, sobbing his eyes out until he ran out of tears. When they finally rose, it was dark, the sky offering nothing more than a dead, moonless, starless stare. "How are we going to escape?" Gareth said. Roan slapped him on the back. "The way we always do," he said. Gareth cocked his head to the side, confused. "With sheer dumb luck." Gareth laughed, and Roan joined him. As they wandered the unnatural night, Roan swore he could feel his soul being stretched, pulled, pushed, and prodded. He could tell Gareth was feeling something similar, because the prince continuously reached up to touch his chest, where he'd been stabbed by the king's bane, rubbing the skin through his shirt. But Roan knew it wasn't Gareth's injury that was bothering him. It was this place. Felicity, the queen of the wood nymphs, hadn't spoken to them again, leaving a hollow, empty place in Roan's chest. It was strange, even knowing what she was, what she'd done to them, he still longed for her voice, her touch. "I am weak," he thought, just as Gwendolyn always believed. They were walking toward the enormous mirror that stretched from barren ground to black sky, but despite the fact that they'd been marching for hours on end, it never seemed any nearer. The desolate place was full of tricks, too, cracks appearing suddenly beneath their feet, spouting fire. Snakes appearing from thin air, striking at their heels. Nasty flying creatures with leathery wings swarming from above, clawing their cheeks, and then disappearing into the sky. "Felicity is madder than a six-legged donkey," Roan commented. "Aye, she killed her own mother and stole her sister's souls," Gareth said. "The lockets?" "Aye, I've heard stories about the wood nymphs. Their souls are kept in their mirrored lockets. Over time, they break down until they fade away into nothingness, unless they feed them new souls. That's where we come in. Information that would have been useful before we looked into her locket. I didn't see you helping. I didn't know what was happening. And I did. We were practically slobbering over her." Roan laughed. This was normal. The constant bickering, the finger pointing. "Nice shiner, by the way," Gareth said. "You got in a few good shots. Sorry about your neck." Roan could still see the marks where he'd squeezed Gareth's throat, the purple-blue shapes of his fingers and thumbs. "For the peacemaker, you're awfully violent," Gareth grumbled, but Roan could tell it was meant as a jape. "I didn't used to be like this. Must be your influence." Before Gareth could offer a retort, a snake burst from the ground, springing up and straight for Roan's face. He flinched back, but Gareth's hand snapped out, catching the viper by the throat. "Nasty creatures," he said, tossing it aside like a bad piece of fruit. Roan breathed again.
"You saved my life," he said.
Gareth shrugged it off. "Not necessarily. We don't even know if they're poisonous. Why would the nymph want to kill us right away when she went through so much trouble to capture us in the first place? From the stories I've heard of the woodland nymphs, she'll want to torment us for an eternity before fully sucking our souls dry. That makes me feel better. Thank you.
My pleasure.
What else have you heard? Is there any escaping this mirror?
Well, someone must have escaped to tell these tales in the first place. But if they knew a way out, I've never heard it.
Fantastic.
They continued on in silence, moving more for the sake of feeling like they were doing something than for any other real purpose. Eventually, Roan collapsed. Gareth joined him soon after. They lay their cheeks on the rough ground and looked at each other. Roan asked,
"What do you think she did with Gwendolyn?"
Gareth shrugged in the dark. "Probably released her. Felicity won't want to start a war with the Orions." The thought made Roan feel somewhat better. If it wasn't for him, they never would have set foot in the confounded tangle in the first place.
"I'm bone weary."
"Aye, me too.
I don't want to wake up with a snake on my face."
"We could take turns sleeping. Me first."
"Bastard.
Speaking of bastards, tell me a bedtime story." Roan closed his eyes, opened them.
"What kind of story?"
"About your mother. About your father. About what really happened to you." Roan sighed deeply. There was dust in his mouth, and he smacked his dry lips.
"There's not much to tell, and I only know what my Southron guardian told me."
"Tell me anyway." Roan didn't like to think about the past, not when most of it felt like someone else's tale. "They discovered my mark when I was a suckling babe."
"You were born in the West.
How are you alive?"
Roan shook his head.
"My parents saved me. They killed for me. My mother, she died for me, for my family. She killed herself to protect them from a truth that would destroy our house."
"What truth?"
"Me,"
Roan said simply.
"Why didn't the West change its ways? Why didn't your father change the laws? He was the king."
Roan propped his head up on his hand.
"It's not that simple. Hundreds of years of history, of tradition, of fear, cannot be easily undone. And there were the Furia to consider."
"The Furia."
Gareth wrinkled his nose.
"The Red Warriors are strong, I admit. I have seen them in battle along the spear. They are fierce. But doesn't the monarchy control them?"
"From what my guardian explained to me about Western politics, no. Neither the crown nor the faith control one another. They are separate bodies, unified only in maintaining peace and righteousness over the realm. If the monarchy was thought to have fallen into sin, the Furia would have the power and numbers to overthrow the crown and replace the ruler with another, more benevolent leader."
"Benevolent meaning someone who would kill those bearing skin marks?"
"Aye, the sin-marked. That's how they think of people like me. The spawn of demons, enemies to wrath."
"So to save you, they had to send you away. It was the only choice."
"Aye. I'm sorry."
Roan's eyes met Gareth's, which were full of sincerity.
"What about you? You can't leave the East forever. It's your home."
"Not anymore. Now I have no home. And anyway, last I checked, we were stuck in a nymph's enchanted soul locket, so good point. For a moment I had forgotten."
"You can sleep first," Gareth said.
"You sure?"
"Aye. I'll keep the creepy crawlies away."
"Thank you."
The moment Roan's eyes closed, weariness sucked him under like a black tide, and he slept. His dreams were full of darkness and pain.
20. The Northern Kingdom, north of Gearhead. Anis Gerick.
The ragtag group of soldiers formed a twisting, turning brown line in the snowfields. Though a makeshift road had been packed down by the lead riders, the going was slow, the surface too slippery for anyone to move with haste. Arch hadn't woken up during the additional week Anise had given him, so they had departed Gearhart as planned, with a force that was now well over 1,000. She'd refused to leave Archer behind, and so her brother lay, still sleeping, in the back of a cart drawn by 2 horses. Packed around him were bags of dry provisions, as well as several barrels of mammothin stew, a parting gift from Netta.
"Hardly a chariot fit for a king," Anise thought. "Or even a prince, for that matter." But it was the best they could do at this point, and he seemed comfortable enough. Perhaps one of the many bumps in the road would finally wake him. And yet, in the back of Anise's mind, she wondered whether it was better if he slept for a while longer, at least until they'd taken back Castle Hill. That way he wouldn't have to fight. That way she wouldn't have to explain that she was the ruler of the North now.
Zelda walked beside Archie's cart, refusing to ride a horse. Something about the packed snow being softer. Her husband, Sir Craig, rode a brown mare beside her, his stout form at odds with his beautiful steed. A voice drew Anise away from her brother's cart.
"May I ask what is on a queen's mind?"
Taryn asked, riding beside her. He was mounted on the largest stallion Anise had ever seen, as large as she suspected the giant horses of Fane's might be. Still, the massive beast was breathing hard under its burden. Though it seemed impossible, Anise almost thought Taryn looked even bigger than he had a week before. "Must be all of Netta's mammothin stew. I've probably gained a quarter stone, too."
"You may ask," Anise said.
"But you won't answer."
Anise offered him a wry smile. Taryn said,
"I thought we were past all of our secrets."
"We are, but I still have a right to my own thoughts. What if I asked you of the bloodlust you feel in battle?"
Taryn grimaced. She'd struck a chord, as she knew she would, though it made her feel a little bad.
"Fair enough."
He rode away, and Anise wished she hadn't broached the topic of what he referred to as the monster inside. Unfortunately, it was that very monster that had saved them on multiple occasions, and was why he would be such a valuable soldier in the battle to come. Still, it saddened Anise to think that there was a part of Taryn that scared her, a part of him that scared himself.
"I want to love all of you. I want to understand."
The unspoken words whispered through her mind as she watched him ride away. His presence was quickly replaced by Sir Dietrich, whose mount was a white mare with a chestnut mane. He was once again wearing his full plate mail. Though he'd had the chance to obtain a brand new set, he was still in his old armour, with its dents and scrapes and dull sheen. "You're wearing your boots," he said, grinning.
"I can unlace them quickly,"
Anise shot back. His smile faded. "You want to know the truth?"
"That's all I ever ask for."
"I bear a skin mark." Though Anise had suspected it for a while, the revelation still sent an icy zing of energy racing through her. The only other skin-marked person she'd ever known was the Ice Lord, and he was about as personable as an icicle. Of course, she'd seen 3 other marked during the battle at Raiders Pass. Beyond Stone Sledge, the Iron Marked, some kind of a healer, though she didn't know his name, and her brother, Bane, bearing the Death Mark.
"Let me guess. You bear the Sword Mark," Anise said.
"That's as good a name for it as any. I was practically born with a sword in my hand, besting youth twice my age and winning competitions across the realm."
"And saving the lives of queens,"
Anise smirked, glad things were back to normal with the knight. A little truth went a long way. He smiled back. "No, that was a first."
"I would have had you knighted, but you have already achieved that status."
"A kiss on the cheek will do."
"It'll earn you a punch on the other cheek from Taryn."
"It'll be worth it. Plus, I heard he hits like a girl." Anise shook her head. Dietrich was a notorious flirt, even with her.
"I'm a girl, and I hit pretty hard."
She raised a gloved fist.
"She does."
Zelda cut in. "She's my niece." Dietrich ignored her and said to her niece, "No, you're a woman. There's a difference." "But I was once a girl, and even then I hit hard enough to make the boys cry. I would have liked to see that." "What does this sword mark look like?"
"Like a burn scar," Dietrich said, winking.
"He burned himself to hide the mark," Zelda said. "Now that would hurt."
"Is it true?" Anise asked. He nodded. Anise couldn't imagine doing such a thing, how painful it must have been.
"What did it look like before you scarred your skin?"
"A sword with an ornate handle. The design was quite intricate."
"Why didn't you just tell me?"
"Because I've never told anyone."
"Why not? It would have brought you fame and a place at my father's side."
Despite this smile, he flashed his white teeth, "I was never interested in fame, and it was because of your father that I hid my mark."
"Smart man," Zelda said. "My brother was a greedy king. He coveted those with skin marks."
Anise frowned. She'd hated her father as much as anyone, but there was clearly more to the story.
"What did he do to you?"
Dietrich's smile faded. "Nothing. He did nothing to me." Anise suddenly felt wrong probing into this man's past. She'd gotten the information she was looking for, the information she needed to utilize the knight to the best of his abilities. Any other information was his to offer.
"Fine. And thank you again for saving my life."
The smile was back. "Now, how about that kiss?"
Zelda laughed.
"Hit him, Your Highness."
She didn't need to be told twice. Twice Anise had seen the strange knight Christopher Metz ride past, and twice he'd offered her a "Your Highness" and ridden onward. It was like he was pacing the line of soldiers, back and forth, back and forth, back to front, front to back. The only one she'd seen him speak to was her aunt and Sir Craig. The three of them seemed to get on surprisingly well, or perhaps it wasn't so surprising, given their individual eccentricities. Now, as Sir Metz passed the third time, she beckoned him over. Terrin hadn't returned since he'd left, and neither had Sir Dietrich, especially after she'd given him the kiss he'd requested, a snowball to the face. The rest of the soldiers treated her with deference, and were always awkward around her, even if she tried to make conversation. Archer had always been so good with his people, his admirers, but such skill had been lost on Anise.
"Yes, Your Highness. How may I serve?" Sir Matt said as his horse trotted up. Just like the first time she'd met the stiff-looking knight, his silver armour was so well polished she could see her wobbly reflection in it. His straw-like hair was perfectly combed to the side. His back was straight, and his hands in perfect position on his horse's reins.
"Tell me about yourself,"
Anise said, trying to make conversation.
"Your Highness?"
Anise sighed, remembering how specific she'd had to be with her questions before. She rephrased.
"Where are you from?"
"The north," Met said. Anise shook her head. Either the knight had a sense of humour as dry as the Skara Desert, or he was as literal as an ice bear.
"Which city?"
"Darin," he said. She nodded. Darin was the Northern Kingdom's easternmost city, protecting the jagged cliffs known as the Razor from attack by the eastern stronghold called Crow's Nest.
"And your family?"
"Yes, they were there too."
Anise noticed he had a strange way of not looking her in the eyes when he spoke to her. It was a little disconcerting, and she found herself bobbing her head to try to meet his gaze. But each time he just darted his eyes away from her. Once more she rephrased.
"Where is your family now?"
"In Darin," he said.
"So you left, but they never did?"
"Obviously. I have just stated that they are in Darin, whilst I am here, riding next to you, suggesting that, yes, I left." The words having left his mouth, he snapped his lips shut, before opening them to say, "I've done it again, haven't I?"
Anise didn't know what to say. She'd never been spoken to in such a way in her life.
Done what?
Been rude, Metz explained. I have a tendency to do that. Mother used to say that I couldn't read between the lines. I read the lines and nothing more.
It's fine, Anise said. I don't mind. Brutal honesty is a quality I happen to admire.
Really? But you're the queen. She changed the subject.
How did you achieve knighthood?
A smile seemed to want to form on his lips, but it didn't quite make it. My father is a soldier. As a boy, he taught me how to use weapons. When I held a sword for the first time, I never wanted to put it down again. I even slept with it at night. I have a tendency to get obsessed with things.
Like polishing your armor.
Anise had intended it as a joke, but the knight nodded vehemently. How did you know?
It shines like a crystal goblet.
Oh. He looked down, as if only just noticing how well polished it was. Yes, I guess it does. I shine it thrice a day, more if it gets smudged, or if it snows.
Which never happens in the north, Anise said.
What? Yes, it does. All the time. Almost every day, in fact. He paused, scrunching his forehead. Wait. Sorry. That was a jape, wasn't it? Sarcasm. Mother said japes were wasted on my ears, and that I was born without a mind for sarcasm.
I am the one who should apologize. I will try to refrain from japing, though I must admit it will be hard for me. I wear sarcasm as well as armor.
I wish I could appreciate humor, the knight said. I always saw other soldiers laughing, but never understood why.
Back to your knighthood.
Of course. I joined the army when I came of age. I was good at following orders, though my superiors often mocked me.
Didn't that bother you?
No. Yes. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt.
It's fine. Anyway, I saved 114 lives at the Black Cliffs.
Anise laughed. That's a precise number.
Metz frowned, but said nothing. Apparently her comment wasn't worthy of a response.
I only mean that most people would say they saved many lives. They wouldn't count them.
Oh, I count everything. Like how many steps we've taken since departing Gearhet. 2,786. Well, those are my horse's steps, and it will vary from horse to horse. Plus a horse has four legs, so it's very different for those on foot.
You've been counting your horse's steps since we left this morning.
Yes.
While we've been talking.
It's just something I do.
Anise shook her head. She'd never met anyone as strange as this knight,
which was saying something, considering her aunt was known as one of the oddest women in Castle Hill.
Like escaping from my uncle and seeking me out.
No. That's completely different. And I didn't seek you out. I sought out your brother. I thought he was the king.
Either way, you did what you thought was right. That's a rare thing these days, especially in the north.
Once more he frowned, as if her words perturbed him greatly. I'm a knight. It is my duty to serve the king or queen, and you are the queen, not your uncle.
Pride rose inside Anise. Something about this man gave her hope for the future, a hope she hadn't felt in a long time. Tell me about the potion my uncle made you drink.
I didn't want to drink it.
I know.
Soldiers held me down. They pinched my nose. They forced it down my throat. It burned like fire.
Then what happened?
I don't want to talk about it.
Please. It is important.
Is it a command? I'm good at following orders. Anise knew that with a simple command he would tell her everything she wanted to know, but the fear in his eyes, the way his lips were trembling. She couldn't use his obedience against him.
No, but I would like it if you would tell me.
I don't want to."
His voice rose suddenly, startling her, almost making her drop the reins.
"I don't want to! I don't want to!"
Taryn was by her side in an instant, his horse nosing between them. Sir Dietrich appeared on the opposite side, pulling the knight away as he continued to scream.
"Let go of me! Don't touch me! I don't want to!"
"I'm sorry," Anise said, horrified by the reaction she'd gotten.
"Don't hurt him, Dietrich."
Dietrich led Metz and his horse away, the knight continuing his fit. Zelda swooped in, saying something to Metz that seemed to calm him. Taryn placed a hand on Anise's arm.
"Are you well, my queen?"
Anise shook her head.
"A little startled, but yes. We were just talking, and then—"
"His head isn't on quite straight," Taryn said. "Be careful around him."
"I don't think he would hurt me. He's too faithful for that."
"Still, I'll be present for any future interactions with him."
"I don't need a caretaker," Anise said.
Taryn mumbled something that sounded like a curse.
"What was that? Care to share with your queen?"
"I said, the stubborn queen."
Anise laughed.
"The stubborn queen and the armoured knight," she said. "Sounds like an awful children's story."
"If by awful you mean riveting," Taryn said.
"Why, Taryn, was that a joke?
I was beginning to think your sense of humour had frozen and fallen off back on the howling tundra."
"Was that before or after your victory over the ice bear?" he fired back.
"You know, you once called me the bear slayer. That had a nice ring to it."
"As you reminded me, you never actually slayed the bear. Just chased it off with a few snowballs."
"That's true. You were stumbling over a snowdrift at the time, right?"
"Har and double har," Taryn said.
He lowered his voice, suddenly sounding serious, using the gruff tone that always made Anise's heart beat just a little faster.
"You know, even when you were being stubborn and, well, yourself, I wanted to kiss you."
"Even back on the howling tundra?"
"Even on the first night."
"When you finally took off your armour so we could snuggle?"
Taryn sniffed at the word choice.
"I was being honourable, sharing my body heat. I seem to remember you shivering and begging me to."
"Maybe because I'd wanted to kiss you, too."
"Even before you knew who I really was."
Anise paused. She wasn't certain. She'd felt a connection with him on the tundra, of that there was no doubt, but whether it was romantic or not was hard to pinpoint.
"Ah, see? You were scared of me, weren't you?"
"Terrified,"
Anise said, punching him on the shoulder. It made a dull clang.
"Ow! I prefer you without armour."
"The day is wearing thin. We should stop and make camp. If you can procure a large enough tent, I'd be happy to oblige your request for no armour."
Anise laughed, but she had to turn away to hide her blush. His words had sent warmth from her chest to her extremities. Regardless of the playfulness in his offer, he was right. It had been a long, cold march, and she could see the weariness in the hunched forms of the soldiers marching behind her.
"I agree," she said. "We will shelter under the trees for the night."
Up ahead, the forward units had entered a thick, dark forest.
"I will have Dietrich prepare the largest tent we have available. And you will remove your armour. That is a command."
Before Taryn could respond, there was a shout from up ahead, and then a scream. More screams followed, and then the trees began to shift, as if pummeled by a powerful wind, though the breeze was gentle. One of them cracked, collapsing, crushing a soldier beneath it. The tree began to rise once more, gripped by an enormous grey hand. Above the fist rose the face of a monster, thrice again the size of Taryn. By the time Anise and Taryn reached the tree line, a group of archers had formed, unleashing volley after volley at the thing standing before them. Thing was one of several words floating through Anise's mind as she tried to describe the enemy they now faced. Other choices included monster and troll. Its legs were grey and muscular, and appeared to be made of stone, as was the rest of it. Tatters of ripped cloth, the remains of its clothing, Anise guessed, clung to its chest and torso, but the shredded material seemed far too small to have ever fit such a giant. Its head was a lumpy boulder, its mouth a cave with large, blunt teeth. Its eyes were bulbous, colourless orbs that could have been staring right at her and she wouldn't be able to tell. The arrows that fell against the stone creature were naught but pesky gnats, and it swatted them away with one hand while swinging the broken tree trunk with the other. The line of archers dove in every direction as the tree swept past, knocking several into the air like the monster was playing a game of stickball, with the soldiers as the balls. One tried to run, and the creature used the tree like a mallet, pounding him on the head. Anise looked away, unable to stomach the explosion of gore. Terin said, "Can you distract it?"
"What?"
Anise watched as another archer was batted away, smashing into a tree and crumpling to the ground. In only a few bare moments, most of her forward riders had been destroyed.
"Oi! Listen to me."
He grabbed her chin and forced her to look directly into his eye slits.
"Distract it," he repeated. "Rally the cavalry. Use the ground soldiers to keep it busy. Understood?"
She nodded, sticking out her jaw.
"I am the queen," she reminded herself. "These soldiers are my responsibility."
Terin started to ride away toward the giant's left flank.
"Terin," she said.
He turned, glancing back, his dark armor even darker in the fading light.
"Be careful."
She swore she could see his grin through his faceplate. As he rode away, she whipped her own steed around.
"First cavalry! To me!"
Not unlike the Easterners, the Northerners did not protect their rulers from battle. Kings and queens were expected to be strong, leading rather than cowering. Though Anise loathed many of the Northern traditions, this was one she would uphold as long as she drew breath.
"Only risk for others what you would risk for yourself," she thought,
a mantra she'd overheard Arch being taught as a youth, when it was a foregone conclusion that he would be the next king. 2 dozen seasoned riders who had fought with Anise and her brother at Raiders Pass rode up, awaiting orders. She searched for Sir Dietrich, who she'd appointed as their commander. He was nowhere to be found.
"No time to think about that."
She spoke to all of them at once. "We must harry the beast from all sides, in and out, like we are one person breathing together. Do not risk your lives if you can help it. Understood?"
"No," one of them said. "We will distract the monster, but our lives are yours, our queen."
A lump formed in Anise's throat at the loyalty displayed by this man, by all of them.
"Then mine is yours," she answered.
To another soldier, she said,
"You."
His name escaped her.
"Sir Morley," he provided.
"Sir, please instruct the 1st battalion of foot soldiers to charge the enemy, but to stop before getting within the cavalry's ranks. We want the giant looking in many different directions. Then come join your brothers."
There was a scream, and all heads turned in the direction of the sound. The giant had dropped the tree, and was now holding a man between his hands, pulling him apart. Anise ripped her gaze away.
"Go, now."
"Yes, your highness. What about the rest of the army?"
Anise's eyes were steel.
"If we fail, they should retreat."
She wouldn't risk any more lives. If this didn't work, then perhaps their foe was impossible to defeat. The man nodded and rode off, calling her orders to the foot soldiers trailing behind the party of riders. They were the best of the best. She had purposely set them at the front of their marching train, along with the 1st Cavalry. Behind them, the remainder of the army was less convincing, most of them untrained, too young or too old.
"And me?" someone else said, riding up. "What are your orders?"
It was Sir Metz, his armour shining even in the waning daylight. There was no hint of awkwardness in him from his earlier fit, as if it never happened. He was part of the 2nd Cavalry.
"If we are defeated, lead the retreat, Sir Metz. Protect my brother, for he will be the king you thought he was. And Zelda, too. Keep her safe."
She could tell by the hard set of his jaw that he wasn't pleased with her command, but his honour wouldn't allow him to contradict it.
"Yes, your highness,"
She addressed the first cavalry once more, raising her own sword in the air.
"For the kingdom!" she cried.
"For the kingdom!"
they roared in response. They charged into battle. The monster was chewing on something, its stone teeth grinding together. Anise refused to focus on that, instead steering her steed toward a spot just to the left of it. She looked for Terin, but didn't see him anywhere, though she spotted his horse wandering along the edge of the forest, riderless.
"Ah!"
she screamed, brandishing her sword above her head, though she had no intention of actually using it against the stone giant. The rest of her soldiers roared in unison. The giant spat out a bone and swung a fist with such unexpected speed that, for a moment, Anise was too stunned to react, barreling headlong into danger. At the last second, however, she managed to steer even further left, the breath of the punch whistling past her like a storm wind. One of her men wasn't so fortunate, taking the brunt of the blow on his flank. Her stomach heaved as she heard both his and his horse's bones breaking. It had barely begun, and already her plan was falling to pieces, the giant stomping into the thick of the cavalry, punching and kicking. Another man was crushed, his scream lost as he was driven a foot into the ground.
"Frozen hell," Anise thought. "What is this creature?"
The foot soldiers arrived, and, despite her warning to not get too close, several of them charged between the riders and slashed at the beast's stone ankles. It roared, but not in pain, in anger, grabbing two of them by the necks and smashing them repeatedly together before dropping them. Their broken bodies hit the ground and didn't move again. The monster lunged for another soldier, but a white form streaked past, arms wrapping around the foot soldier and carrying him out of harm's way. The giant grabbed at the empty air a few times, as if still trying to understand what had happened. Beyond it, Anise saw Sir Christoph Metz deposit the soldier back on his feet, unharmed.
"Blast him!" Anise cursed in her head.
The knight was supposed to lead the retreat and protect her brother if it came to it, and now he was in the thick of things.
"Terin, where are you?"
she wanted to shout, but she dared not give away his position, wherever it may be. The monster targeted another rider, stomping toward him.
"No more!"
Anise breathed, and then she yelled.
"Here! Over here, you ugly stone mutt! Face the bear slayer, you coward!"
The creature turned, its oddly vacant eyes seeming to focus for a second on her. And then it unleashed a garbled cry and stampeded right for her. That's when she spotted Terin, who was somehow clinging to the giant's shoulder, gripping it with one powerful hand, while it flung itself toward Anise. Her eyes met his for an instant, and then he disappeared behind the monster's head.
"Distract it."
Those two words were all Anise could think, as she swung her leg over her mount and slid down, slapping the horse on the rump. It didn't need further urging, galloping away and out of danger. The giant curled its stone fist, the ground shaking underfoot as it stomped toward her, its strides swallowing the distance too fast, too fast. She dove to the side, landing hard on her shoulder, but letting the momentum carry her into a roll and then back onto her feet. Out of the corner of her eye, she caught a glimpse of the creature flying past, skidding to a stop, gravel spitting from its feet. Terin was behind its head now, clinging on with both hands, trying to steady himself. The giant had finally realized it had company, shaking its head and swatting at its own skull. Anise held her breath as Terin dodged the blows, which crashed like thunder, stone on stone. Chunks of rocks broke off, tumbling around Anise like a landslide. She covered her head as several rocks glanced off her arms painfully. When she looked back, half the monster's head was gone from self-inflicted wounds, but still Terin clung to it. Strange inky sap, blood, was running down the giant's neck, shoulders, back, and chest. The monster stumbled, falling to one knee, but still it continued to hit itself in the head, trying to dislodge Terin, who clambered over the giant's brow, raised his morning star, and shoved the spiked ball deep into the creature's eye. The glassy orb popped like an inflated sack, spewing out a white, milky substance. It roared, and this time Anise could feel the pain in its bellow as it fell to its side. But still Terran didn't relent, pushing the barbed weapon in up to his elbow, twisting it around until it emerged from inside the monster's head, almost like he was threading a needle through cloth, bursting from its other eye, splattering more white liquid. And then he ripped himself free, pulling his Morningstar with him, landing on the run and diving out of the way as the monster's arm flapped wildly, slamming to the ground with a thud. Anise could barely breathe as the giant writhed and flopped for a few moments, scratching at its own eyes before going still. All around the beast, the soldiers cheered. Terran, however, stood and stalked off into the woods, his chest rising and falling beneath his dark armor, sappy blood and milky ichor dripping from the spikes of his Morningstar. Anise was about to run after him when something even stranger happened. The stone giant began to crumble, the rocky exterior falling away from its sides, its broad chest, its back, its legs, creating a miniature quarry around its body. Until all that was left was... Anise gasped. A man. In death, their fallen foe was naught but a man, naked save for a thin loincloth covering his midsection. He had the build of a soldier, strong arms and muscular chest, laced with scars, though he wore no armor save for the stone layers that had protected him. Anise had ordered he be covered with a large sheet, especially because she couldn't bear to look at his mutilated eyes, dark, bloody pits which seemed to stare at her sightlessly. Soldiers milled around the body, inspecting the shattered stone surrounding him. Terran had yet to return from the woods. Zelda stood beside her. Sir Craig, upon Anise's request, had ridden off to check on Archer.
"Frozen hell! How is this possible?"
Anise said, a question intended for herself. But she received an answer from Sir Christoph Metz, who strode up to her, bowing stiffly.
"Your Highness, this is one of the Imposter King's men," he said.
"No."
Anise didn't want to believe it. Because if it was true, then they were doomed. They'd lost 28 men in the battle, and at least that many had sustained serious injuries. And they'd only fought one monster. To have any hope of victory against 98 more of them, they would need a force at least 5 times the size of the one they had, and that was assuming they were all well-trained career soldiers, which they weren't.
No wonder my uncle sent his entire army to Blackstone for the assault on Night's End,
Anise said, trying not to sound defeated, though she could hear the tremor in her own voice.
Are all his monsters this strong?
Their levels of strength vary from monster to monster, Met said, as do their skills. Some are fast, some are strong, some are agile. They seem to complement each other.
Fantastic,
Anise muttered. The knight frowned.
I failed to see how our current situation could be defined by the word fantastic.
Zelda snorted, but didn't comment.
Sarcasm, sir,
Anise explained.
Oh, sorry.
He looked like he was about to say something else, but just then another soldier came jogging up. He was a foot soldier, still wearing his helm and shield, though his faceplate was up, revealing a young, clean-shaven man around Archer's age.
"Sir, you saved my life,"
he said to Metz.
"I owe you a life debt."
He thrust a hand toward the knight. Metz backed away quickly, as if being offered a severed body part as a trophy.
"Don't touch me!"
he said, his face aghast with horror. The young soldier raised his eyebrows in surprise.
"Apologies, sir. I only meant to thank you."
Metz took a deep breath, his fingers curling and uncurling at his sides.
"You're welcome. Just please don't touch me. I don't like it when people touch me."
Though it was clear the young soldier didn't understand exactly what was happening, he nodded and said,
"I will repay this debt, one way or another."
"I need no gold," Metz said.
The man shook his head and departed.
"You know," Anise said, "he wasn't actually offering you coin."
Metz frowned.
"Then what was all that talk of repayment and debts?"
Zelda said,
"He didn't mean it, literally. Just like when my husband called himself a drunk all the time, he only meant he was clumsy."
She chuckled at this like it was the funniest quip.
Then he should have said what he meant. People should say what they mean.
More and more, Anise was finding herself speechless around the thin but valiant knight, and yet she welcomed the distraction.
"Why did you disobey my command?" she asked him. "You have vowed to serve me."
"I did not disobey," Metz said, unblinking.
"It's true," Zelda said. "I heard your command."
Anise massaged her forehead. Her shoulder ached, and the pain was radiating into her skull. Metz's word games were not helping the situation.
"I commanded you to lead the retreat and protect my brother and aunt."
"Was your brother harmed?" "Clearly, your aunt is safe."
Beside him, Zelda nodded vehemently.
"Well, no, but
I apologize for the interruption, Your Highness. But was retreat necessary?"
"No, because Terin managed to again.
My sincerest apologies for the interruption, my queen. But I followed your command very specifically. You were not specific on what I should do in the event that we were not defeated, only if we were. I was fully prepared to carry out your command if the battle had turned against us."
"But how could you carry out my command if you were killed?"
"I wasn't killed."
Anise groaned. Having a conversation with this knight was like trying to run circles around oneself.
"Why did you save that soldier?"
"He was going to die if I didn't."
"And you always try to save people from dying?"
His next response came a beat slower, his voice softer. "Yes."
"Why?"
"I refuse to answer, unless you command me to. Specifically."
Anise stared at him. She'd made a habit of prying secrets from people lately, and she wasn't exactly fond of it. And, in this case, whatever secret Sametz was harbouring wouldn't be likely to affect his performance in battle.
"You may go," she said. "But we're not done. We'll need your counsel on how to defeat the rest of my uncle's army."
Metz bowed and departed. Sir Dietrich appeared, taking Metz's place in front of her.
"I can explain," he said.
Zelda said, "This should be entertaining."
Anise sighed. She was tired of explanations and arguments. Was ruling always this difficult?
"Explain why, in their hour of greatest need, you were not there to lead your men into battle. Explain why you lost two knights today while you were nowhere to be seen. Please, I would love to hear your explanation."
"Me too," Zelda noted.
"I was making water," Dietrich said.
Anise almost choked.
"The whole time?"
"Impressive," Zelda chimed in. "He has a strong flow."
Dietrich said,
"I like to stay well hydrated, and nature was calling something fierce. I heard shouts and tried to finish up as quickly as I could, but by the time I arrived, the monster had already fallen."
Anise couldn't wait for this day to be over, considering the strange turn it had taken. But she couldn't exactly fault the man for urinating. It wasn't like they were expecting to be attacked by a monster made of stone.
"Please try to be more alert, sir," she said. "Just because you saved mine and Arch's lives doesn't mean you can shirk your duty."
"I'm sorry. I will learn to relieve myself faster."
Zelda guffawed.
"We should include that skill in our training regimen."
Anise didn't have the energy left to chastise the knight further. Also, she had to turn away quickly to hide her own amusement. Why did he have to be so damn charming all the time? However, her smile was quickly obliterated when she saw Terin stride from the woods. She knew exactly why he'd fled the scene. She'd seen it before, when he closed himself off from her after killing three soldiers. She could see it now in the dark, intense stare radiating through his faceplate. He might have killed a monster, but another lurked somewhere inside him, and it was one he could not kill.
"Every monster is different," Sir Metz explained.
Anise had gathered all of her commanders to listen to him, to ask questions, to prepare. Zelda was also included, and was standing near the back, gnawing on a chicken wing. Anise was pleasantly surprised when Sir Dietrich showed up on time, offering her a huge grin. He was a hard man to stay angry at. "But they're all made from stone," the commander of the 3rd Cavalry asked. Sir Metz breathed deeply at having been interrupted. "Please save all questions for the end. But no, they are not all made from stone. There seem to be endless